no sense.
This is the Relic Radio Show, old-time radio entertainment still standing the test of time, from RelicRadio.com. Welcome back to the Relic Radio Show, 60 minutes of old-time radio drama brought to you every Tuesday by RelicRadio.com. Our first show this week is Box 13. We'll hear The Sad Night, their story from December 19, 1948. After that is the Damon Runyon Theater and Breach of Promise, their story from December 5th, 1948.
Box 13, with the star of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd, as Dan Holliday.
You driveling old idiot. What did you do with it?
I'm not going to tell you.
Carl, be careful.
Shut up, Therese. We've got to find out what he did with that copybook. We've...
What's the matter?
Look, he's dead.
Dead? You killed him.
Don't be stupid. He just died. There's no one can prove anything. Just keep your mouth shut and help me find out what he did with the copybook.
Well, well, well. Somebody sends me a copybook through Box 13. Now I wonder why.
Back to Box 13 and Dan Holliday's newest adventure, The Sad Night.
It was just a child's copybook. And on the front cover was the name Marina Layton and a date, the year 1930, written in a childish scrawled handwriting. I riffled through the pages. There was nothing of interest, at least. That's the way it looked then. But Susie thought differently.
Maybe it's some kind of a code, Mr. Holliday. Like one to a buried treasure.
Susie, with your imagination and my typewriter, we could go places.
Well, gee, the Count of Monte Woolley found a buried treasure.
That's Monte Cristo, Susie. Two different people.
Well, they both had beards. Oh, look.
Huh? What's that?
It's a letter to Box 13. Listen. Box 13. A day or so ago, you may have received a child's copybook in the mail. If you did, I should appreciate it if you'd bring it to the address below. Yours truly, Therese Layton.
Let me see that, Susie.
Here.
6821 Lakeshore Boulevard. Swanky neighborhood.
Are you going to take it back, Mr. Holliday?
Oh, yes, Susie. If only to see how the other half lives. So I went to 6821 Lakeshore Boulevard. I tossed the copybook in the back seat of my car and it bounced on the floor. Maybe I was thinking about anything but the book, for when I rang the doorbell of the big house, I suddenly remembered I'd left the book in the car. I just about started back down after it when the door opened.
Yes?
I'm looking for Therese Layton.
I'm Mrs. Layton. And you?
Holliday. Dan Holliday. I'm sorry, Box 13.
Oh, of course. Please come in, Mr. Holliday. In the library, please.
Thank you.
Won't you sit down, Mr. Holliday?
Thanks very much.
It's very kind of you to come all this way to return the book. You see, it belongs to my little girl, and I suppose she sent the book to you in, well, mischievously.
Your little girl?
Yes, Marina. Sometimes I think she's a problem child.
Oh, really? How old is she, Mrs. Layton?
Seven.
Did she tell you she sent the book to Box 13?
Well, no, as a matter of fact, she wouldn't say. Then her father found a newspaper with an advertisement cut from it.
And?
We got hold of a paper with the same date and compared the page.
Nice detective work, Mrs. Layton.
I suppose all this uproar over a child's book seems, well, stupid, doesn't it?
Oh, no, not at all. But there's one question I'd like to ask.
Yes, Mr. Holliday?
You say Marina's 7 years old?
That's right. Why?
There's a date in the book, 1930. It seems to have been written in the same hand as the rest. That date would make her quite a big little girl, wouldn't it?
She put down that date, I suppose, well, not thinking.
Oh, yes, of course. Where is she now, Mrs. Layton?
She's dead, Mr. Holliday.
Huh?
Mr. Holliday, this is my husband, Carl.
How do you do?
I'm very happy to know you, Mr. Holliday. Do you have the book?
You get right to the point, don't you?
Mr. Holliday, our daughter Marina is dead. We want the book merely for sentimental reasons.
Well, I could understand that if your wife hadn't... Well...
lied to you?
Bluntly, yes.
Therese, dear, will you excuse us?
Yes, yes, sir. I'll be upstairs.
My wife isn't well, Mr. Holliday. It's not an easy thing for me to say, but she imagines our daughter is still alive.
Look, Mr. Layton, if I'd ever written a story with as many holes in it as yours, I'd be laughed out of the writing game.
What do you mean?
Your wife says Marina sent me the book, yet you say Marina's dead. You know, you two should get together.
All right, Mr. Holliday. How much do you want for the book?
Oh, now we're getting someplace. What's it worth to you?
500.
Oh? That's a lot of money for a child's copybook.
You asked how much, and I told you. Now, may I have the book?
I don't think so.
It's worth nothing to you, Mr. Holliday. Believe me, it's worth absolutely nothing to you.
All right, maybe I'm just curious. Tell me why you want the book, and maybe we'll do business.
I can't tell you.
Or you won't tell me. Is that it?
I want that book. Now.
I haven't got it with me.
You're lying.
All right, search me. I haven't got it with me. I forgot it.
You're going to be difficult.
Look, the book was sent to Box 13, obviously not by you, your wife, or your daughter. You found out it was sent when you traced my aunt, right? All right, that means someone else sent it to me. I'll return the book when I find out who and why.
Mr. Holliday, I'm going to get that book.
All right, all right. We'll play a game. Book, book, book. Who's got the book? Now, goodbye, Mr. Layton.
Goodbye, Mr. Holliday. You can find your way out, I hope.
I think so. Oh, anytime you want to tell me the reason behind all this, we may be able to do business.
I think we'll do business, Mr. Holliday. Later.
I left, and when I got home, I spent the rest of the day and most of the evening trying to figure out why anyone would be so anxious to get hold of the book. It was filled with a kid's scrawling handwriting, sums in addition, problems in subtraction, alphabets. Then I came to one page and stopped. It was filled with strange, weird-looking figures, as a kid would try to draw human beings. But there was something about them that didn't look like a kid's work. They were grotesque, almost fiendish faces and distorted, twisted bodies. And underneath were three words in Spanish, La Noche Triste, the sad night. The words were scrawled too, but somehow they were different from the rest in the book. I kept turning back to that page, wondering, trying to connect something in my mind with those figures in the book. And I must have dozed off because the next thing I knew, it was 3 a.m. I turned off my light, lay back in bed, then I was getting company unexpected, and I wasn't in the mood to entertain. Well, 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 what a wonderful thing a skeleton key is, like the magic words, open sesame. Somebody was looking for something, and it wasn't Easter eggs on the White House lawn. I waited, and then... Looking for something, bud? Whoever it was didn't wait for the floor show. I turned on the light. Yeah. He'd grabbed the book, but he had left a knife behind. One that I picked up with a handkerchief. If there were fingerprints, he would introduce me to the gent. And Kling could do me that favor.
Got any idea who it was, Holliday?
No, I haven't, Kling. We had our waltz in the dark.
Oh, must have been romantic.
Oh, yes, yes, I was overcome. Look, can you get prints off that knife handle?
Seems to me you could pick an easier way of meeting people.
Oh, I like the hard way. It makes for lasting friendships.
Look, did he try to knife you?
Well, I don't think he was doing KP with it.
Why was he after you?
He wasn't.
Oh, I see. He breaks in at 3 a.m. You surprise him, he pulls a knife on you. But he wasn't after you. It was just a social call, or maybe he was a visiting nurse.
Kling, will you see about those prints?
Yeah, if you'll prefer charges.
Maybe, but more important, he took something I want back.
What?
A child's copybook.
A child... You know, Holiday, the more I see of you in this Box 13 gimmick you run, the more I believe in elves and pixies. Why did you have a child's copybook?
I'm learning to write.
You're going to keep this all to yourself, huh?
Till I find out what it's all about.
Okay. Well, from what you say about the cookie who disturbed your Betty by this morning, he might have a record.
In that case, you can tell me who he is.
You don't want me to pick him up?
No, I'd rather have the pleasure. You see, he hung one on my chin.
He hung one on his... All right. Come back in an hour.
Oh, Mr. Holiday. Gee, I've been trying to get in touch with you all morning.
I was at headquarters, Susie.
Oh, what'd you do?
Oh, no, don't jump to conclusions. Why were you trying to get in touch?
Look.
Huh? When did this come?
This morning. I picked up Box 13 mail at the Star Times, and that note was in it.
Mm-hmm. Well, as they say in the books, Susie, the plot thickens. In fact, it's so thick now, I can't see a thing.
How'd you get that bruise on your chin?
I shaved with a baseball bat this morning.
Oh. Well, are you going to meet Marina Layton?
Yeah, that's what she asked me to do in her letter. So if you want me, I'll be at...
At where she says, the lobby of the Camden Hotel.
So I got to the lobby of the Camden Hotel. It wasn't hard to find Marina Layton. She was dressed as she said she'd be. I took a good look before walking over to her. She was about 24, not pretty, but with one of those faces that always says, wonderful day, isn't it? Okay, so maybe now I'd find out what all the excitement was about. I walked over. Oh, pardon me. Are you Marina Layton?
Yes. And you're...
That's it, Box 13.
You know, I didn't think there was such a thing. I thought this would all turn out to be some sort of a joke.
Oh? Well, do we sit here?
If you like. Well, may I have it, Mr...
Holiday. First name's Dan.
All right. May I have the book, Dan?
I haven't got it, Marina.
But you must have it. Mark said he sent it to you.
Oh, no. Another character in the show. And who's Mark?
He was my father's dearest friend. But surely you ought to know that.
Look, Marina, I don't know a thing.
Wait a moment. Here. Here's his letter to me.
You want me to read it?
Yes.
Dear Marina, the years I've kept something from you that your father wanted you to have, now I know someone else wants it. But you can have it by writing to Box 13, care of the Star Times. I want to write more, but I don't dare. Just remember, your own name is a clue. Love, Mark.
Well?
Well, what? If your father wanted you to have what he gave to this Mark, why didn't he try to get it from me?
Who? Who tried to get what from you?
Your father and mother, they...
That's crazy. My mother died when I was born, and my father disappeared almost 5 years ago.
Oh, now it begins to make some sense. Not much, but a little.
What are you talking about?
The character who said he was your father, he wanted that copybook of yours. He must have found out in some way that Mark had it.
But who was the man?
I don't know. He said he was your father.
I don't understand all this.
Makes two of us. But listen, I...
What's the matter?
How do I know you're Marina Layton?
But I am.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess you are. Because since someone already took the copybook from me early this morning, it'd be a little senseless to try to get it this way. All right, Marina. What do you know about a copybook? Yours, with the date 1930 written in it.
Copybook? Mine? But nothing. Nothing at all.
Huh? Oh, now, wait a minute. All this business has to mean something. Don't you even remember a copybook?
Well, I suppose I must have had one. Wait, of course. Black, ragged-looking. Alphabets in it.
That's it. Now, what about it?
Oh, nothing. It was just an ordinary book. I scribbled in it, and... Did you say 1930?
Well, yes, why?
Because in 1930, I was with my father in Mexico. I had the book then because I was being tutored by Mark, and I used it for my lessons.
Did you write anything in it that might, well, that might be important?
No, not a thing.
Well, you must have.
I didn't.
Did you write the Spanish words La Noche Triste?
Why, that means the sad night.
Yes, I know. Did you write them?
No, I don't think so.
Then your father must have. But why?
Are you sure those words were in the book?
Well, of course I am. Oh, would Mark know?
Mark? Why, Mark's dead.
And now back to The Sad Night, another Box 13 adventure with Alan Ladd as Dan Holliday.
We went to the place where Mark had lived. Yes, he was dead. Heart failure, the doctor said. But we learned something else. That he had had visitors the night he had died. And from the description of them, they could have only been the man and woman who posed as Marina's parents. And I learned a few things more from Marina. That her father was an archaeologist, and in 1930 he was excavating Aztec ruins outside Mexico City. It was on the way back to Kling's office in my car that she told me some more.
Father disappeared in Brazil almost 5 years ago. Then the remains of his expedition were found.
And your father?
He died. But he left records, letters for the museum.
And anything for you?
No, nothing.
Are you sure?
Yes.
Wrote letters to the museum, yet nothing for his daughter.
Why do you say it like that?
Doesn't it seem odd that he should leave letters and records for everyone but you?
Yes, it does.
There are a lot of things that seem odd. You wait here, Marina. I'll be right out.
Well, Holliday, I'm just about to leave your office.
Oh, what'd you find out?
You were distinguished company this morning. Little Georgie Garson, strong man, general hoodlum.
Well, I didn't think it was little either.
Want me to pick him up?
Yeah, I'd love your company. Okay, Kling, let's go. I want to ask Georgie a few questions. It took Kling about 5 minutes to get Georgie to talk. He told us he'd been hired to get that book, and from his description of the guy who hired him, well, it couldn't have been anyone else but the man who poses late the day before. Then a quick trip to the house on Lakeshore Boulevard. We might as well have stood in bed. The fake Mr. and Mrs. Layton were gone, and with them, the copybook. And that left us at a dead end. But dead. But at the morgue of the Star Times, Marina and I learned something else.
Uh-huh. I think we got lots of stuff on Albert Layton.
Well, trot it out, Josie.
Yeah. He's the one who got himself lost in Brazil about 5 years ago, isn't he?
Yeah, that's right.
Yeah, here's a folder on him. News clips, photos.
That's Dad.
Look. Look, who is this, Jonesy?
Well, let me see. Oh, that's the guy who found Layton, or what was left of the expedition. Name of Carl Bremer.
Oh, Mr. Bremer and the gent who wanted that book are one and the same. Did you ever see Marina?
Not that I remember.
Where were you when your father went to Brazil?
In school.
And you didn't see him again after he left for Brazil?
No.
Jonesy.
Uh-huh.
You know a lot of things. What are the Spanish words, La Noche Triste mean to you?
Nothing, except they mean the sad night.
Is that all?
Yeah, why?
Because they mean more than that. Marina, can you get a sample of your father's handwriting?
Oh, yes, of course.
And I've got a hunch that Bremer and his wife are leaving for Mexico.
Hey, Dan.
Yeah?
Look, this Layton was an archaeologist. Why don't you go to the museum to find out about him?
Good idea, Jonesy, thanks. But I've got a phone call to make first. If my hunch is correct, we've got to stop Bremer from getting to Mexico.
Let me get this straight, Dan. You want this Bremer and his wife picked up, huh?
Yeah, that's it.
What's the charge?
You pick them up. I'll prefer charges. And maybe one of them will be murder.
What?
Will you do it?
Well, what if they're out of the country by now?
Extradite them.
Well, you've got to have a strong charge to do that.
I have. One, causing the death of an old man by trying to force something out of him. Two, hiring Georgie Garson to break into my apartment. And three, attempting to defraud. Is that enough?
Yeah. Make those charges stick.
You get them, and I'll make them stick. Marina got a sample of her father's handwriting.
Is this what you wanted?
You sure this is your father's handwriting?
Of course. That's a letter from him, just before he left for the interior of Brazil.
But the writing in the book, it was nothing like this.
Well, maybe he didn't write it.
He must have. Wait a minute. Mind if I write on the other side of this paper?
No.
Okay. Now watch. I'm right-handed. But suppose I write like this with my left hand. What's it look like?
Just a scrawl.
Sure, as a kid would write. As you would have written in 1930.
But why would he have done that?
To make it look as though you'd written it.
Well, that doesn't make sense.
It does make sense if you realize that your father had learned something. Something that was big enough to make him want to hide it. And where would he hide it? In a place no one would ever think of looking for it. A kid's copybook.
No. No, he kept his notebooks. Everything he did was in his own notes.
But not this. You were with him in 1930. What was he doing?
Oh, I told you, working on the Aztec ruins outside of Mexico City.
And what did he find?
His findings were published. The museum has
the museum. What's the matter with me? Come on, Marina. Maybe we're getting someplace.
Yes, of course I know Albert Layton's work. He was a great man. The world has lost a genius, Miss Layton. Too bad.
Look, Mr. Dougal, we want you to help us.
I'll do my best. You said over the phone that it was important, had something to do with our Mexican antiquities here at the museum.
Yes, that's right. What did Professor Layton send here?
Well, come in here, into the Aztec room.
I remember all these things.
Of course, everything isn't here. The Mexican museums were given their share and...
Oh, pardon me.
Yeah?
Look.
What's the matter?
Look, on that far wall, those figures.
Oh, yes. Well, they're only copies. Quite well done, of course. The original paintings were lost when the Spaniards destroyed the temples. The Aztecs were jealous and warlike people.
Because on the far wall were the same figures I'd seen in that copybook. The same grotesque, weird figures with their twisted bodies and savage faces. There were three of them. Their painted eyes looked out at us, seemed to accuse us. I turned to the curator. Mr. Dougal?
Yes, Mr. Holliday.
What are those figures?
Well, they're Aztec gods. The one over here in the upper left is Quetzalcoatl, supreme god of the Aztecs. The one in the upper right is Huitzilopochtli. He's one of my favorites, a god of war. The one at the base of the triangle is Tlaloc, god of rain.
Marina, those were the figures in your copybook, and they were above the words La Noche Triste.
But why? Why should Dad have done that?
Mr. Dougal, what is that triangle?
Well, where each of those figures is painted was a temple long ago destroyed by the Spaniards under Cortez. In the center was one of the causeways that led to Tenochtitlan. That's today's Mexico City. It was over that causeway that the Spaniards made their escape on La Noche Triste.
La Noche Triste. Look, sit down, Mr. Dougal. I want you to tell me a lot more. The curator talked for an hour. And what he told Marina and me all added up. The copybook, the figures of those old Aztec gods. All Marina's father had something, all right. And he hid it in that copybook. No wonder Bremer wanted it. No wonder old Mark had kept it, and the whole thing made a story that went back over 400 years. A story of greed and bloodshed. One that reached out to touch me, Marina, old Mark, Bremer, all of us. Later in Kling's office, facing the Bremers, with Marina sitting there, too.
All right, Holliday, let's have it.
First, I'll take that copybook, Bremer.
All right. What good will it do you?
None. And it wouldn't have done you any good, either.
What do you mean?
You caused the death of one man to get this. Another man, famous, respected, lost his head and tried to keep what he had found. But it wouldn't have done your father any good, either, Marina.
No, I know.
What's the story, Dan?
Well, it really begins, Kling, when Bremer found the remains of the Layton expedition in Brazil. He found letters, records. He brought some of them back with him, but some he didn't. That right, Bremer?
You know everything. You tell it.
Thank you, I will. One of the letters was to Marina. Marina, whose name is the same as the Indian girl who was Cortez's consort. That was the one you kept, Bremer. A letter telling Marina about the copybook and what it contained.
All right, what is it, Holliday?
Let's go back to July 1st, 1520, to Hernan Cortez and his army. The army that marched through Mexico and destroyed the Aztec Empire.
That's got something to do with all this?
Everything. On that night, the Aztecs rose up in fury against the Spaniards. They had thought Cortez and his men were gods, but they'd found out differently. They determined to drive the Spaniards out forever. The Spaniards took all the gold they could carry. The Aztecs went after them. They trapped Cortez and his army on one of the causeways that led to the city. The causeways were narrow. There were thousands of Indians in canoes. All night long, the battle went on until in the morning, 450 of the Spaniards were dead and thousands of Aztecs. But Cortez and the remnant of his army escaped, got to the mainland.
And the copybook?
Those three words, La Noche Triste, the sad night, are written into Mexican history as the night Cortez and his army and the Aztecs fought and killed each other until the canals were choked with them. The gold the Spaniards took with them did them no good. They couldn't fight with it or eat it. So sobbing and screaming, they dumped the treasure into the waters of the canal, and it sank into the mud of the bottom. It's never been found. Marina's father thought he had located it. But look. Here's a map of modern Mexico City, where the causeways once ran. There are streets and houses. So you see, no one will ever find that gold. And maybe it's just as well. It's too red with blood to be of any use to anyone.
But gee, Mr. Holliday, if all that gold's there, why doesn't somebody go after it?
Oh, you too, Susan.
No, I guess not. But, oh, tell me something, Mr. Holliday. What were the names of those Aztec gods?
Winkin', Blinkin', and Nod. Good night, Susie.
Next week, same time, through the courtesy of Paramount Pictures, Alan Ladd stars as Dan Holliday in Box 13. Box 13 is directed by Richard Sandville, with an original story by Russell Hughes. Original music is composed and conducted by Rudy Schrager. The part of Susie is played by Sylvia Picker, and that of Lieutenant Kling by Edmund MacDonald. Production is supervised by Vern Karstensen. This is a Mayfair production from Hollywood. Watch for Alan Ladd in his latest Paramount picture.
The Damon Runyon Theater. Once again, the Damon Runyon Theater brings you another story by the master storyteller, Damon Runyon. And this one, Breach of Promise. And to tell it to you, here is Broadway.
Thanks. How I happen to know this story is a story in itself. But I will skip that and tell you about Mr. Jabez Tuesday and a doll named Amelia Bodkin. It also concerns Harry the Horse and Milkier Willie. And how they get mixed up in something like this is quite a story, which I will tell you in a minute.
And now, back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, Breach of Promise.
Well, one day a certain party by the name of Judge Farber sends word that he wishes to see me in his office. Of course, he is no more a judge than I am. And he is never a judge. And he is 100-1 in my line against ever being a judge. But he gets his name from being very smart and being able to help certain citizens out of difficulties when the need for that arises. Well, I call on Judge Farber, and he takes me into his private office, and the scene is as follows.
Broadway, I'd like very much to get in touch with a couple of friends of yours.
Friends of mine?
Mm-hmm.
Who might they be, Judge?
They might be anyone. But these particular friends happen to be Harry the Horse and Milkier Willie.
Huh? Why do you wish to contact them?
I have a little job for them.
Huh? What is the job?
Well, it's out-of-town work that requires tact and, some nerve.
The nerve is with them, Judge, but by no stretch of the imagination can I conscientiously recommend their tact.
I have a client who is willing to pay quite a large sum of money to, obtain some letters.
Letters?
Letters.
Well, you see, Judge, as much as I like to help out a friend, I am afraid I cannot do this.
Why not?
Because if I steer them into anything that is bad, they will come to see me. I do not like Harry the Horse and Milkier Willie to come to see me with anything on their minds but their hats.
I see. Well, suppose you just tell me where they live, and I'll contact them.
They do not live exactly anywhere. But there is a certain spot in Clinton Street where information might be picked up.
Mm-hmm. Thank you, Broadway. Thank you very much. If I can ever return the favor, please let me know.
Judge, I hope I am never in a spot where I need a favor like the ones you are able to return. Well, that is the start of it, and I do not hear anything more of the matter for several weeks. But one evening I am in Mindy's enjoying a little cold borscht, which is most refreshing in the hot weather which is going on at the time. I say I am enjoying it, but not for long, because all of a sudden there is a blast of air, and the scene is as follows.
Broadway?
Broadway, our pal.
Harry, Milkier.
What is the matter? You swallow something?
My tongue, I think. But you...
We are looking for Judge Farber. Do you see him around lately?
No, not exactly. Why?
Well, we wish to thank you anyway for the job of work you throw our way. It is an interesting job. Is it not, Milkier?
In fact, most interesting.
It turns out well for you?
Well, yes and no. Do you wish to hear about it?
Well, I...
You go ahead with your borscht, and I will give you all the details so you will understand why we wish to see Judge Farber.
All right, Harry.
Well, it turns out that the job is not for Judge Farber personally, but for a client of his.
Yeah, and who is this client but Mr. Jabez Tuesday?
The millionaire?
The same.
The one who owns all the restaurants.
What does he want with you?
I am coming to that. Well, we go to see this Mr. Jabez Tuesday. He lives at a Fifth Avenue hotel where he makes his home. And me and Milkier go
in
there to
yes,
see him.
Oh, yes. Yes, I see. You're the two gentlemen whom the judge sent to do... that is, you're the two men whom I
wish
to...
We are here, Mr. Tuesday. Get to the point.
Yeah, to the point.
Well, I want you to get some letters for me.
Oh, no, Nix. That is out. We do not crack a post office.
Oh, you don't understand.
There is nothing to understand about cracking a post office. It is just not being done.
Well, these letters are in a private home.
Oh, that is different. Proceed, Mr. Tuesday.
I wrote them to a Miss Amelia Bodkin, and there are, well, certain things in the letters I wish I hadn't said.
What do you write?
Well, certain things which, well, you see...
What you mean to say is that you write things which this doll, Amelia Bodkin, could use to put the blast on you.
Precisely.
Why do you want these letters?
Because I'm going to be married, and I do not think my fiancé would appreciate the fact that I wrote them.
Mm-hmm.
I'm afraid Miss Bodkin may sue me for breach of promise.
What is that?
Well, it's when someone promises to do something and then fails to do it.
Oh, we have got another name for it, but it is practically the same thing.
And we go about correcting the situation a little different.
Will you do this for me?
We must settle first the matter of finance.
Well, I'll pay $10,000 for those letters.
That sounds like you once are a busy fellow with a pen.
Valerie must never find out about them.
Now you bring in a ringer. Who is this Valerie?
Oh, she's my fiancée, Valerie Scarwater. She comes from a fine family. Any breath of scandal would result in wrecking my coming marriage to her.
Okay. Now, what's the layout?
The what?
He means, where are the letters? And is the crib hard to crack?
What?
He means, is it a tough job?
Oh, no. No, not at all. Amelia lives in Tarrytown. There's only a butler beside her in the house. But you've got to make it look as though you didn't just go after the letters.
If they are missing, it is better than 6-5. Someone will say they are taken.
That is very logical, Harry.
It is more than that. It makes sense.
Look, the letters are in an inlaid silver box. Take the box along with other silverware.
There is other silverware?
Yes, a Paul Revere teapot.
Paul Revere? The jockey?
The teapot is worth quite a bit, so you can make the whole thing look as though it's an ordinary burglary.
Ordinary? You wrong us, Mr. Tuesday.
Oh, I'm sorry. But you'll do it.
Mr. Tuesday, for 10 G's, Milkier and myself will take the letters off the front of the Giants' uniforms.
Well, that is the start of the story that Harry and Milkier tell. But it is by no means the end. In fact, What starts out as a nice, ordinary deal ends up quite complicated. Anyway, Harry and Milkier borrow a car from a friend and they drive out to Tarrytown. They are approaching the home of Miss Amelia Bodkin, and the scene is as follows.
Milkier.
What, Harry?
What is this you tell me about being able to drive a car like a racing driver?
What's the matter? I am not doing all right.
It would be better if you kept more on the road.
I am looking for the house.
I will look. You will watch the road. Try to stay with it a little more.
It's pretty out here, ain't it?
Do not look at the scenery at night.
Hey, look. There's a house up ahead.
Uh-huh. We will case the place first. Then we will see about making an entrance.
This is a pipe. Just the old doll and a butler.
Yeah. Milkier, why are you driving on the left side of the road?
I am left-handed when I am a kid. I guess I never get over the habit.
Take it easy now. And turn in there where the gatepost is. Then we stop the car and case the place from there.
Sure.
Milkier, you will slow up.
We are not yet to the gatepost.
Milkier, you must not stop the car all at once. Ease into it.
Harry, if you wish to drive, I will move over and you may do so.
Easy, easy. Hey, look out!
Well, from what Harry the horse tells me, Milkier misjudges the distance and does his stopping by means of a concrete gatepost, which is considerably harder than the car. Also, it is considerably harder than Milkier's head, which is quite a feat in itself. Anyway, it is somewhat later when Milkier wakes up. He is in a nice white bed with nice clean sheets. The room is very pretty. In fact, the only jarring note is Harry the horse sitting by the bed looking at him. Then the scene is as follows.
I am glad to see you are awake. In fact, I am glad I am able to see.
What happens?
We are without a car.
Ooh, my head.
If you will put your hand up there, you will find that your head is now being held together by embroidery.
I'm hurt?
You do not feel anything?
No, why? Should I?
I guess not. Milk ear. Do you know where we are?
No.
We are in the home of Miss Amelia Bodkin.
Then I make it.
But while you are out like a light, there is a doctor.
Why?
Because you need one.
Are you hurt?
No, I jumped before we hit.
You leave me to take the rap alone?
Look, it is better this way.
I do not go along with that.
Just listen to me.
For what?
It is better this way. Now, instead of having to crack this place, we are now inside.
The hard way.
The letters we are here to get are in this house. The doctor says you cannot move.
The doctor is crazy.
Maybe. But now you will stay here and find out where are the letters. Get it?
Yeah. Yeah, sure. This is essential.
Uh-huh. Now you...
May I come here?
Certainly, Miss Bodkin, certainly.
Oh, you're awake, aren't you?
Yeah.
You know, you were very lucky. That cut might have been worse. And let me look at that bandage.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, sure.
Hungry?
Hungry? Yeah, I guess I am.
Good. I've made some nice hot broth.
This is very elegant of you, Miss Bodkin.
Nonsense. I'm only too happy the accident happened where I could be of some help.
I am very sorry I knocked over your gatepost.
Oh, fiddlesticks, I didn't like it anyway. I've been meaning to have it removed for a long time.
My friend saves you the trouble.
Yes. Well, now I'll get the broth.
Yeah, thanks.
Now, don't move around too much. The doctor says you're to be quiet.
What is so funny?
I am laughing because I remember the time you once walked from Lower Broadway to Times Square with two slugs in you. Now all you got is a scratch.
And some hot broth. She's a nice old doll, ain't she?
Yeah, a nice old doll, but you never can tell about people. Here she is, a nice old doll, with some letters she is going to use to put the blast on Mr. Jabez Tuesday.
Yeah. Sometimes I am not very happy about human nature. You got any idea where the letters are?
No, you have got to find out yourself.
Myself? What about you?
You crazy, I cannot stay here.
Why not?
It is not my head which is caved in.
Yeah, I see.
So now all you gotta do is be smart. Is that possible?
What do you mean?
Nothing, but...
Put the broth on the bed table, Charles, thank you.
Will that be all, Miss Amelia?
I think so, Charles, yes. Oh, this is Charles, I don't know your name.
Mine is Harry, and this is my friend...
My name is Clarence.
What?
but I would not like for it to get around.
It will go no further.
Well, now that's settled. Now let's have some of this nice broth.
You are going to feed him?
The doctor says he mustn't move too much.
Harry, you hear what the doctor says. I must not move too much.
Uh-huh. Well, I will be getting back to town. We have got some business to attend to, and the sooner it is settled, the better it will be for all parties concerned. You know that, Clarence?
Ta-ta, Harry. I will see you later.
I will keep in touch by telephone.
Charles, show Mr. Harry out.
Yes, Miss Amelia.
Now, some nice hot broth.
This is a very nice thing you do, Miss Amelia.
Piffle, it's the only thing I can do for a fellow human being. Oh, careful, huh? It might be too hot.
You, cooked this up yourself?
Yes. Don't you like it?
It is good. In fact, it is by far the best soup I ever eat.
Why, thank you. Oh, it's so seldom that I get to make anything for anyone but Charles and myself that I...
You are going to say something, Miss Amelia?
I'm almost ashamed of what I was going to say.
But go ahead. Say it. You are among friends.
Well, it's just that your accident... I mean, it happened here... Do you like homemade apple pie, Mr. Clarence?
I do not think I ever eat any. No, come to think of it, I do not.
Then you will. And roast beef, Yorkshire pudding, brown potatoes, and I have a whole cellar full of canned fruits just waiting to be put into pies.
Look, Miss Amelia, maybe it is better if you do not go to so much trouble for somebody you do not even know.
But I want to. It gets rather lonesome here. And you seem so nice.
Yeah? I seem nice?
Now, this isn't getting you some nourishment. Come, eat the rest of the broth.
Well, that is the way it goes. Milkier is now in a nice spot to get the lettuce and the 10,000 fish. But what happens? Well, I will tell you about it in a minute.
And now back to the Damon Runyon Theater and the famous story, Breach of Promise.
Well, Milkier Willie stays in Miss Amelia Bodkin's house. It comes up some days later, and Milkier is able to sit up. Personally, I think Milkier could walk around with no head. He is that tough. But he has got to find the letters. So what goes on is as follows.
Do you care for more coffee, Mr. Clarence?
Huh? Oh, no thanks, Charles.
Then I'll take out the tray.
Charles.
Yes, Mr. Clarence?
Look, drop that Mr. stuff. You and me can talk man to man, huh?
I suppose so.
Miss Amelia, it seems to me that a nice old doll like she is should be married a long time ago. What happens that she is not?
I think because she is in love with someone.
Is that not the usual reason for marriage?
You don't understand. The man she loves is Mr. Jabez Tuesday. You've heard of him, haven't you?
Yeah, in a roundabout way.
Well, they met a long time ago. Then he invested some money in a business. It was her money.
He never pays it back?
Oh, yes, yes. With interest. But it just seemed that he became too busy. He came here less often. Now we see him only about once every 5 or 6 months.
Uh-huh. Does Miss Amelia have any proof that they are once in love?
Proof?
Well, yeah, you know, a guy writes letters, stuff like that.
Oh, yes, she has letters.
Uh-huh. Funny about dolls, they keep things like that. That's the reason I asked. You know, dolls are soft that way.
Yes, they are.
She probably keeps the letters all tied up in a blue ribbon, huh?
No, they're in that silver box right over there on the window table.
Ah. Well, thanks, Charles.
For what, Clarence?
For nothing. Yeah?
Milkier, this is Harry.
Yeah.
What is happening?
I know where the letters are.
Okay. Put the to snatch on him and get out of there.
Sure, tonight.
I borrow another car. We will pick you up.
Okay.
It is a cinch, huh?
Yeah, a cinch.
Okay, see you later.
Come in.
I heard the phone ring.
Uh-huh. Harry wants to know how I am.
Oh. I thought the phone might be for me, but I hope I didn't disturb you.
No, not at all.
I really came in for something.
Yeah?
I came in for this box.
The box?
Yes, there's something in it.
Oh, it looks like it is a valuable box.
Oh, it's very old, but what's in the box is worth $1,000,000.
A million? Maybe more like 10,000.
What?
Nothing.
Mr. Clarence, would you think me a foolish old woman if I talked to you about something?
Like, for instance, about what?
These are letters.
Yeah. Yeah, I see.
I've kept them for years. Now I'm going to burn them.
Huh? What for? You say they're worth $1,000,000.
Not anymore. They were as long as I thought he'd come back.
You are not really going to burn them.
Yes. They don't mean anything now. He's going to marry someone.
But look, if these letters... Oh, I mean, they're love letters, huh?
Yes, they are.
But then why burn them? Maybe you could sell them.
Oh, no, that's silly.
Not the way I look at it.
Here's one. I've read it 1,000 times. He wrote it to me after we'd had a quarrel. A silly, stupid little quarrel about another girl.
Yeah? Well, to get back to the selling, I would like...
She had blonde hair. Oh, she was very pretty, much prettier than I. I was jealous, and he and I had a fight. We didn't see each other for 2 days.
Yeah, that's swell, but do not burn these letters.
And then he wrote me this letter. Listen, I'll read you part of
it.
Sweetheart, can you forgive me? I was foolish, and I admit it. Right now, I'm thinking of the last time I saw you with the evening sun turning your brown hair to bronze. No blonde hair could look like that. Darling, I hate blondes. I shall always hate them, and... We made up then.
Yeah, I see, but still we ought to get back...
That's that, I guess. Times change, don't they, Mr. Clarence?
Not much. Where are you going?
To my room.
With the letters?
Why, yes. Why do you ask?
Well, look, you say you are going to burn them.
Yes?
You do not wish to change your mind?
You actually seem disturbed about it. You're very sympathetic, and I'm just a foolish old woman.
Well, no, you are not.
I'm sorry I embarrassed you, but I wanted to talk to someone besides Charles.
Look, Miss Amelia, I am thinking that burning those letters will be a very distasteful job. Why do you not let me do it for you?
That's very kind and thoughtful of you.
It is nothing at all.
I really do hate to burn them myself. If
you will give me the box?
Well,
It's the least I can do for you, Miss Amelia.
All right. Here.
Thank you. You will not regret this action on your part.
You can use the fireplace there. Good night, and thank you.
Good night, Miss Amelia, and thank you. Harry, this is Milker.
What's the matter?
Nothing. I just want to tell you that this is going to be tougher than I think.
What are you talking about? You say you know where the letters are?
Yeah, but strictly speaking, they are not now in the same place.
Look, it is all very well for you to be in such a soft spot, but do not forget that there are 10 G's awaiting us. You will please remember.
I remember, but there is something else that comes up. Do not pick me up tonight. In fact, do not pick me up until I give you the word. Goodbye.
Well, that is the way it stands. And the next day is Saturday, and the day that comes after is bound to be Sunday. And it is on Sunday that something happens at Miss Amelia Bodkin's house. Milkier is sitting on the porch with Charles and Miss Amelia when a big town car drives up in front and stops. And the scene is as follows.
Jabez! Oh, Jabez!
Mr. Tuesday, sir. Mr. Tuesday.
Hello, Amelia. Oh. Hello, Charles. Amelia, darling, can you ever forgive me?
Jabez, why, what do you mean?
Oh, I was a fool, a stupid idiot, and I... Oh.
Oh, Jabez, this is Mr. Clarence. Mr. Clarence, this is Mr. Jabez Tuesday.
Yeah, I recognize him from his pictures, which are in all the papers.
How do you do?
Pretty good, I guess.
Sit down,
Mr. Tuesday. Enjoy the air.
Oh, Jabez, it's so nice to see you.
Oh, Amelia, I want to talk with you. I must.
Why, of course, Jabez. We can go in the house. I'm sure Mr. Clarence will excuse us.
With a great deal of pleasure. Go right ahead.
Yes, excuse us, please.
Come along, Jabez.
This is very odd.
It is? Why?
Why, Mr. Tuesday never comes out here on Sunday, and...
Maybe there is something that changes his mind.
And he seemed very excited, didn't he?
Yeah, he does seem a little upset.
I wonder why.
Charles!
Yes, Mr. Clarence?
Look in the window.
The window?
Yeah, right here.
They're kissing each other.
Uh-huh. Charles, it looks like Miss Amelia has got her guy back.
I don't understand.
Maybe you are not supposed to, Charlie. Just take things as they come, I always say. Just take things as they come. But you can bet your last bob that Miss Amelia Botkin will be Mrs. Jabez Tuesday any day now.
So it seems that Mr. Jabez Tuesday and Miss Amelia Botkin get together. But there are still a few things that need a little clearing up. And they get cleared up when I hear the rest of the story, which I will tell to you in a minute. Like I say, there are a few things that need clearing up. And the clearing up comes that night in Mindy's. Harry is just finishing telling me what happens before, and the scene is as follows.
So, that is that.
It is? But there are a few things I do not understand.
Uh-huh.
No, what I mean is, what happens?
Well, it happens that I sent the letters to Miss Valerie Scarwater.
What? You send Mr. Tuesday's letters to Miss Botkin, to his fiancée?
That is what he does. At first, I am blind enough to put the blast on milk here.
Yeah, but I sent the letters to Miss Scarwater. And it seems she is a blonde, so it is better than even money. She does not like the letter referring to blondes. So, she slugs Mr. Jabez Tuesday with an 18-carat vanity case and turns him out.
Then is when he discovers he loves Miss Botkin.
But what about your 10 G's? You do not get them.
Oh, yes, we do. We have got Mr. Tuesday over a barrel. He gives us the money.
But there is one thing for which we are very mad at Mr. Tuesday, and that is why we wish to locate Judge Farber.
You get 10 G's and you are mad?
Yeah. You remember he tells us that we should collect the silverware so this looks like an ordinary robbery?
Yeah, I remember.
Well, as it turns out, we do not get the silverware. In fact, we go back there some nights later to collect it, and we are turned away by a shotgun.
After he promises us we can have the silver.
So?
So, we wish to locate Judge Farber to find out if we can sue Mr. Jabez Tuesday for breach of promise.
And so ends the famous story, Breach of Promise. For another great Damon Runyon story, listen in again next week to... The Damon Runyon Theater. The Damon Runyon Theater with John Brown as Broadway is directed by Richard Sandville and the stories adapted for radio by Russell Hughes. This is a Mayfair production.
That's going to do it for this week's Relic Radio Show. If you want to find more from Box 13, Damon Runyon Theater, past episodes of this show or all the others, just visit relicradio.com. Find everything available there. Alongside our donate button, if you'd like to help support this and all the shows, give that button a click. My thanks, as always, to those who have. Thanks for joining me today. I'll be back next Tuesday with another episode of the Relic Radio Show.